Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, March 11th. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, yeah. Here comes the warm weather. Now it's time to tie up those laces, get out there for a run. But caution! There is terror awaiting around every turn. You could twist your ankle. You could pull your hamstring. You could strain your meniscus. Not to worry, though. Matthew Goodemote is here from Goodemote Physical Therapy to tell us about body maintenance, stretching, and pain relief as we head into the warm weather months. If you got a question about an ache or pain, and if you listen to the whole show, you'll certainly be pained. 800-348-2551 is the number, 800-348-2551, or give us an email, voxpop@wamc.org. Physical Therapy, Matthew Goodemote, and your calls coming up after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us to talk physical therapy today is Matthew Goodemote. Matthew is one of just 350 spine specialists holding a diploma from the McKenzie Spine Institute International. He and his staff at Goodemote Physical Therapy provide a whole body approach to therapy by offering a blend of exercise-based and manual therapy. Goodemote Physical Therapy offers small group strength training classes for osteoporosis, fall prevention, and athletic performance. Their programs are designed to prevent injury and improve performance in sports and recreation. If you got a question about physical therapy, give us a call now. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Matthew Goodemote, welcome back. How are you?
I'm well, Ray. How are you?
Oh, this weather is fantastic. This is what it's all about. You get outside yet?
Well, last time you were complaining like every time I talked there was a snowstorm, so I decided this time to make it nice and sunny for you.
Well, I'm glad that you have that power. Have you been out and running around yet?
Yeah, I spent some time outside for sure. Beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, now that people are getting out there and starting to perhaps overdo it without getting physically ready, what do you see at this time of year in the shop?
Yeah, this is like these type of days is when people go out. A lot of people go out and run who haven't been running for a while. And often they'll come in with shin splints or a sore foot, plantar fasciitis, that type of thing. We do get an occasional person who gets out and gets a little too aggressive and, you know, like you had mentioned in the beginning, have a hamstring strain or something like that.
Yeah.
But that tends to be later in the season.
Yeah. I find that you never get injured if you're watching TV on the couch. Almost never.
Yeah, I have lots of people with back pain who do that, right?
Well, yeah, all right. I got a little back. Come to think of it. Right, this email came in from Lou in Altamont. Lou writes, Meniere's disease, how is it treated with PT? How long does the fix last? And what potential downsides, if any, are there to PT treatments? First of all, what is Meniere's disease?
I think that Meniere's is something that physical therapists do not typically treat because I've never treated it in 20 years. If I'm correct, Ray, it's ringing in the ears. So there may be some PTs out there who do things like we have the vestibular PTs who do things for the inner ear. And that's just outside of my wheelbox, though. So I don't think I've ever treated anyone with Meniere's. I have to think about that for a second and see if something pops in my brain. But I don't have an answer for that one. Sorry.
Well, our number here is 800-348-2551. If you would also like to stump the band, Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. It's physical therapy, and I got to tell you, the lines tend to load up very quickly when you are here. So if you have a question about physical therapy, I would call very early. So you mentioned people who are running. And they might pull a hammy or they, you know, get what you call a shin splint. What exactly is a shin splint?
Well, there's two different main types of shin splints. So we have on the bottom part of our leg, we have the inner part of our leg, which we call the medial compartment. And in there are several different muscles that go right behind your shin bone and down into your foot. So there's a big muscle that a lot of people irritate called the posterior tibialis. the tibia is your shin bone, so it's behind the shin bone.
Yeah.
And that one goes right to the arch of your foot. And so there's a lot of people who I see, in fact, most runners I see have some tension in that particular muscle, and it's one that's often overlooked for exercise, strengthening, and things like that. The other one is in the front part of the shin bone called your anterior tibialis. And that one is also often associated with running, but it can be in, also with increased walking. So that one is basically due to lifting our toe up when we walk. And so if you've been walking a mile or two, then all of a sudden you walk 5 or 10, then obviously you're lifting your toe more and more times to continue to walk. And so people will get some tension in there. And depending on which one it is, it's going to decide what type of treatment, because the muscle actions are different. In both cases, I recommend things like foam rolling. In our clinic, we do a lot of manual therapy, which helps to ease the discomfort and improve mobility. And then at home, foam rolling. And then, of course, strengthening. So I'm a huge advocate of strengthening. And the more and more I read about benefits of strengthening, the more I see how it needs to be part of most people's daily routine, not daily, but weekly routine, because it is one of the best ways to prevent injury. So you and I have had a joke going back and forth about stretching and flexibility.
Yeah.
And the mythology. Yeah. So a lot of people think I should be stretching more to prevent these things. And the research just simply does not back that up. So there's a whole bunch of potential reasons for it. But the latest research within the last 5 to 10 years indicates that strengthening is actually a far more effective way to minimize injury and also to recover more rapidly from injury.
But I mean, as a counter argument to that, we see athletes, and they're some of the strongest people you will know, professional football or baseball player, and they're the ones who have, you know, they'll have a non-contact injury and they'll be done for possibly their career.
Yeah, yeah. So some of the non-contact injuries, especially something like an ACL, that one is very common. And a lot of times, and there's different training techniques you can reduce that. In fact, we have a program for female athletes to teach them how to strengthen properly so they can minimize their risks of ACL injuries. But with the professional athletes, there's a lot of things going on there, and there's a lot of more season, and there's a lot more wear and tear. So they're not like, you know, just going out to the gym 3 to 5 days a week. They're playing some intense activities and sprinting and cutting and lots of physical movements that way. And if you look at a percentage, though, I don't know that they have a higher incidence of injury. It's just because they're famous on TV that we hear about it. But they may. I'd have to look into that. But a lot of it, I think, stems from things like fatigue, or in some cases, it's just positional. So if you get in a football example and, you know, someone's going up to catch a pass and they have three guys jumping on their back at the same time, you can do a lot of training, but that's a lot of force to take through a joint. So some of the injuries are, especially with football, they're contact related. But the non-contact ones, there is more and more training techniques and changes to how we train, and less flexibility. So it's more about mobility ahead of time. So you'll see a lot of the athletes getting, you know, doing foam rolling or going through a dynamic warm-up prior to an event, and then trying to keep warm. So they, you know, wear a lot of that new gear to keep their tissues warm while they're training to minimize the injury risk.
Now, an ACL, that's a ligament?
Yeah, it's inside the knee. It stands for the anterior cruciate ligament.
Well, you and I...
inside there's two...
Go ahead. No, you go.
There's two ligaments. There's the anterior and the posterior. The posterior is very rarely torn, and it usually doesn't even require surgery to repair because its function in our daily activity is minimal compared to the ACL, which is very important, especially with things like stairs and going down hills and, of course, sports.
Matthew Goodemoto is our guest. You and I have talked about this in some of your past appearances on the program, and one of my contentions was, a lot of these athletes are so strong now, they spend so much time in the weight room that their muscles are much stronger than their ligaments could ever be. And that is why you got guys getting Tommy John surgery so often now, because they throw so hard. These guys are, in the old days, these baseball players especially, there wasn't a lot of weight training involved. Now these guys are really, they work out a lot. I mean, you can only do so much to strengthen a ligament, right?
You can't strengthen a ligament.
Right.
So you can strengthen the muscle and you can strengthen the tendons, right? And the tendons do provide some. So the job of the muscle is a dynamic stabilizer. So it helps to stabilize the joint through movement, whereas a ligament is more similar to like a, this is a terrible analogy, Ray, but it's more similar to like a piece of leather that it doesn't have a lot of give to it.
Yeah.
And so it does have some, but a tendon, for example, is more similar to like a rubber band. It's got a lot of spring and elasticity to it. So that allows us to handle a lot more forces, and the stronger our muscles and the stronger our tendons, the faster we throw, just like you said, but they're also able to absorb more force. So if you had somebody who had a super powerful arm but didn't have the muscle strength to support it, there'd be a lot more injuries because of that. But you're also right in the sense that there are more injuries, and some of that has to do with the amount of force that they're generating. You're, again, 100% right. It's so much force coming through that elbow when they're throwing a ball, which is what's leading to that Tommy John injuries and needing surgery. So there is some truth to what you're saying, but the counter I would have is that if they didn't do the strengthening, but they still were somehow able to generate that same force through mechanics and practice, they're going to be more susceptible to injury, not less susceptible.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest. The lines are now loaded up. When you hear somebody hang up, that's your cue to call 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We will get to your calls about physical therapy in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 800-348-2551. It's Physical Therapy Today with Matthew Goodemote, and Damien is in Munson. Damien, you're on.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello?
Hi, you're on. Good to have you here.
Hi.
Okay.
Right.
Hi, I'm traveling and hitting the hills.
Okay.
I have a question. I had a soft tissue sprain in about 3 months ago at the top of my foot, and didn't do physical therapy because I was concerned about COVID, but I'm still experiencing some pain and some at the base of the toe. So I'm just wondering what kind of exercises you might recommend.
So at the top of the foot, I would first start with manual therapy. And the reason I do that is because oftentimes at 3 months out, the fact that it's persisting means that you have some tension in the muscles. We have little muscles in between our bones. So right at the base of your toes on the top side, you would literally just put your finger in between the bones and press down. And if you found a real sore spot, you would just hold that pressure. So it's a firm but not aggressive a pressure. And until the muscle started to relax. And then I would repeat that to all five toes, in between all five toes. And so that would be my starting point, because I always want to make sure the tissue is mobile. And then the second thing is to make sure the joint is mobile. So I'd make sure your toes can go through their full range of motion and your foot can turn in and turn out and go up and down. And then from there, there's some basic strengthening exercises that would be beneficial. There's one called yoga toe that I do, where you stand with your standing up, feet flat, no socks, no shoes, and you lift just your big toe off the ground. And then you put the big toe down and lift the other four toes up. And it's incredibly difficult for some people to get the coordination. Once you do, it won't be too bad at all. And then I would also have you just balancing on one foot. And the reason for that is when you balance on one foot, all the muscles in the foot will contract. So just because you're trying to maintain balance, you don't even have to think about it. Your body will just do it for you. And those would be like a good starting point. So it always for me starts with mobility, and it's joint mobility and tissue mobility. And then it goes to stability or strength is the second line. If you don't have good mobility, stay there until you do, and then start the strengthening type of things.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Susan in Granville. Hello, Susan.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
My question is, about a year ago, I had a fall. I fell, I missed a step on my neighbor's deck, and I fell right on my left knee.
Ouch.
And then it was just starting to feel better, and I was riding my bicycle, and I fell off my bike and landed, right pretty much in the same area. And so I just, you know, kind of waited for it to heal. But the knee feels okay, but just under the knee to the left, like the left side of my chin, is still like very almost kind of numbish. And I don't, and when I notice when I walk uphill, I get some pain. So I just wasn't sure, you know, what that could possibly be and what to do for it.
So there's a bone right just below the knee called your fibula, and it's part of your shin bone. So we have two shin bones, and right to the outer part of the left knee is that fibula bone. And right there is a nerve that runs through. So if you have any nerve-like symptoms around that area, that's my first thought, is to examine that and to make sure. Sometimes it's a very mild thing where the joint that doesn't move a whole lot moves just slightly. And because it was a trauma, it's possible that the joint isn't in its groove properly, and that will result in persistent pain. And then that anterior tibialis that Ray and I were talking about in the beginning is a muscle on the top of the shin bones, and it has some fibers that go up and attach nearby just below that knee. And then there's some other muscles near the fibula that also attach. So similar to the last caller, I'm a big manual guy, so I would start off with just palpating the area to see if there's areas where the muscle itself has more tension in it, and then to work on improving that mobility. The joint part is a little bit trickier, and it's one of those things that I would really advocate for a physical therapist to examine, because doing it to yourself, it would be way too hard for me to try to describe it over the phone how to do that. So sometimes it just requires, we call it a joint mobilization, where we just move the joint around a little bit, and that can alleviate a lot of discomfort and get you on your way.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Susan. We appreciate the call. Matthew Goodemode is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. Barbara in Wurtsboro, New York. Hello, Barbara.
You're up.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I've been diagnosed with spinal stenosis with an MRI about 15, 20 years ago, and it's bothered me off and on, but now it's really, I'm a big avid hiker, and I can't do it because I get such a low backache. I wonder what I could do, whether I need surgery or if I could do something, you know, along the lines of stretching, whatever.
So stenosis is a condition where it's a structural problem. So what's happened is, as you've gotten older, your spine has degenerated. So the discs in between each bone have gotten thinner. I described it like when you were a child, they were grapes, and now it's more like a raisin. And as that happens, okay, the canal where the nerve runs through gets also a little smaller. And the most common problems with stenosis are going to be walking and standing for prolonged periods of time. Now, you have something that's a bit tricky for me, because usually walking uphill with stenosis doesn't bother it at all, but walking down will. Huh. So the hiking part, going up will be fine. Maybe you can get someone to give you a car ride down, but the downhill is going to be tricky with stenosis.
Actually, it bothers me going uphill.
Notice that. Okay, it's not stenosis then. That's an important part. So you have stenosis, which is an accurate diagnosis, but the thing that's causing the problem going up the hill is most likely not stenosis, because, again, when you have stenosis, it's a product of not having enough room, not enough space. And when we're going uphill, we tend to lean forward, which means we flex in the lumbar spine. And it's a way to
test this out. But I can't stand for any length of time. It hurts me to stand too long.
So you may in fact have stenosis that's affecting the standing, but again, going uphill, that would be an unusual presentation. It's usually the opposite. It's going down the hill. So I'm not trying to say you don't have stenosis, because you do, because you had an MRI that showed that. But to answer the question, what you can do about it is, yes, there are mobility exercises to do. One of the ones you should be doing every day, like literally every time you go to the restroom, is a simple backwards bend, where you put the hands in the small of your back and bend backwards. But to improve stenosis, you also need strengthening exercises. So you have to strengthen that. The word that everyone's talking about now is the core. Right. And the core means your abdominal muscles, but it also means your lower back muscles and your gluteus muscles. So a core is like the apple core all the way around.
Right.
So you would have to do exercises specifically for.
I do squats with weights and sit-ups.
but I should do more maybe. Oh,
you should not do sit-ups. Sit-ups aren't very good for the discs. There's other ways that you can get a far better abdominal workout than sit-ups. We have lots of ways, in fact, in physical therapy that you can do it. And you have to do exercises specifically for your glutes and lower back, which would be things like bridges, where you're laying on your back, lifting your butt up into the air. But we do a ton of them standing, too. So you can use bands, and you can have bands around your knees and walk sideways, taking steps sideways to work on your glute muscles. Huh. So the abdominal muscle doing a sit-up is probably the least least important one to do to help your condition. So it's okay to do in the sense because of stenosis, it's a safe exercise for that particular diagnosis. But you need strengthening the back muscles. Okay. And if you're doing a sit-up, for example, you're not getting your lower back muscles. You're getting your front abdominal muscles.
Well, Barbara, so thank you very much.
That would be an important thing to get. Yeah.
Appreciate that call very much. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. It's physical therapy today on the program. Let's go to Margaret in Glenville. Margaret, hello.
Yes, hello. I'm not calling with a problem. I'm calling with a comment. I'm enjoying your program as I was driving today.
Oh, thank you.
And I just wanted to make the comment that I have been diagnosed with Meniere's disease now for 18 years. Mm-hmm. It's a chronic disease, mm-hmm. and it's characterized by fluctuating hearing, but more importantly, by severe bouts of vertigo, which are disabling.
Yeah.
And it can be addressed with medication, but also there is a role for physical therapy at a certain point.
Yeah.
As you mentioned briefly, the possibility of vestibular rehabilitation. I had almost complete removal of my inner ear, and I've gone from not being able to walk across a room to mostly with my own course of rehabilitation to being able to cross-country ski and hike and be active again.
That's great.
But
that's great.
Certainly
I did remember
for physical therapy.
I did remember that exact thing that with Meniere's, physical therapy can't actually address the disease itself, but like you said, we can help with the balance part. And that's one of those cases where I should have known, and the fellow physical therapists are angry at me not saying so.
Well, you're going to hear about it.
Well, you can't possibly know everything spur of the moment. I worked in healthcare, but one of the reasons I called was so that people don't minimize symptoms. If they have fluctuating hearing and they're having bouts of vertigo, it's something that really needs to be addressed. I've spoken with people who went sometimes for years undiagnosed. And it's a very lonely and disabling situation if it's not addressed. But thank you very much.
Right.
Margaret, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Great call, and congratulations on how you have improved the situation. You can cross-country ski. That's terrific. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Sharon is in Esopus. Sharon, you're on.
Yes, hi. Thank you. I have been having a lot of neck pain accompanied with trap spasms, and I did see a PT and an osteopath, and it's helped tremendously, but I got an x-ray. I have anterolisthesis in my neck between C4 and 5 and 5 and 6, and I was wondering if what kind of upper body exercises I should either avoid or do, because I don't want it to get worse, but, you know, I have a rowing machine. I've done yoga in the past.
Yeah.
And so I was just wondering your thoughts about that.
So an anterolisthesis is where, when we're degenerating, instead of the vertebrae coming directly over top of one another, one of the vertebrae is coming down forward. So a retrolisthesis goes in the opposite direction. So what's basically happening there, depending on the severity of it, would determine what is acceptable and what's not acceptable. So a grade one, for example, is probably just a normal thing that's an incidental finding and may not even be related to why you're having the neck pain. So when they get bigger, where it's a grade two, a grade three, grade 4, those are substantially more significant and usually require more drastic intervention like surgery, which is incredibly rare at the neck. So I wouldn't be overly concerned because I don't, it's not a common thing. It's a very, very small percentage. As far as the exercises to do, the number one most important thing with the spine is its mobility. So it would make sure you have and maintain your range of motion in all directions. So it's a simple look to the right, look to the left, bring your ear to the left shoulder, bring your right ear to your right shoulder, bend your head forward, bend your head backwards. And just literally on a daily basis, checking to maintain the range of motion that you have in the neck. Number two on the priority list would be posture, and really conscientious about how you're holding your posture, and specifically the thoracic spine, to make sure that you don't have an overly rounded thoracic spine, which is very difficult for the cervical spine. And then as far as strengthening exercises, it would be upper body type of strengthening. And typically, because most people don't address the back muscles as much as the front muscles in our body, mm-hmm. we as physical therapists often have them working on their upper back muscles. And those are things like rows and lat pull down type of exercises in a gym. It's definitely okay to do other things like planks, for example, are a good one for the upper body to have support with, and then working on just general conditioning for the upper body. It is okay to do overhead pressing too, like a military press or a dumbbell press overhead. Uh-huh. So it'd be really just more of a comprehensive type of, you know, that anyone would do for upper body strengthening. There are some isometric exercises I would teach for the neck, which would be as simple as, you know, getting a little bouncy ball from Hannaford or Price Chopper or something like that, like a little kid's ball. But the ones that have a little bit of spring to them too. So not like a basketball or soccer ball, but like a little kid's mm-hmm. bouncy ball. And then mm-hmm. putting that against the wall and simply pressing your head so the back of your head pushes against the ball, and then do it to the sides and do it to the front, starting with like a 10-second hold. So as you push back into the ball, mm-hmm. using just your neck muscles, so not your body, and hold for like a 10-second count, and do that 2 or 3 times, and, you know, 2-3 times a week would be plenty, just to maintain, again, the strength of the neck muscles themselves.
Sharon, thank
you. But there's other things you can do that are far more advanced, but you don't need to.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest. Let's grab one email here before the next break, and this is from Jennifer. And Jennifer writes, I've had chronic shoulder pain for several years. After x-rays were done, I've been told that there are signs of tendinitis and bone spurs, but I was not given any advice as to how to perhaps correct this. Would physical therapy be an option that might provide relief and or exercises I can do to strengthen shoulders? Uncomfortable, particularly laying down at night. And that is from Jennifer.
100% yes. In fact, this would be the most one of the most important things she could do is physical therapy.
Okay.
So there's things that we can do for the manual tissue, but then strengthening of the rotator cuff and then the upper back muscles also. Physical therapy is appropriate for this.
Okay. You want to go any further with that, or shall we take a break?
Oh, let's take a break.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I could use a rest myself. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back with more of your emails, more of your calls coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's 800-348-2551 if you want to question Matthew Goodemote about things. This email came in from our buddy Kim. And Kim says, I'm 59 years old. Yikes. I was doing CrossFit for years, but I've stopped. I now ride my bike, walk, garden. I'm active. My question is, my right knee hurts, and I had multiple x-rays standing and sitting. Nothing is showing, and I'm thankful, especially for no arthritis. It hurts squatting, stairs, kneeling, sitting with my knees underneath me. Will physical therapy help? What kind of exercises will they be giving me? I'll be having an MRI in April, and that's from Kim.
So sometimes there's a low-level inflammation in the knee, so the bending or sitting on the heels part is what would make me think that there might be something going on that way. And it wouldn't show on an x-ray, so that could explain it. And an MRI, if there's fluid in the knee joint, it will show it. But that would also explain why it persists.
Yeah.
And what I've experienced is that when people have a difficulty fully bending their knee, it's typically one of two things. One is swelling, and the other is there is an injury to the cartilage, the meniscus. And that would also be a reason for persistence. So my guess is it's one of the two things there. Exercise-wise, it would, number one, it would always be mobility. So we have a theme going again.
Yep.
And to make sure you have as much motion as you possibly can in the knee, if not full range of motion. And that's passively. So just bringing your heel towards your butt, for example, and making sure it goes all the way straight. And then I would have her foam rolling. As a CrossFitter, she should be familiar with foam rolling and doing it for the thigh muscles as well as the calf muscles. And then for strengthening, I would start off with some, depending on where her problems were coming from, I would start off on the table doing things like bridges and stuff like that just to wake some muscles up. But as far as strengthening, I would do modified squats, meaning I would go to the pain but not through the pain. So if she could do a squat to the height of a chair, which is about 18 inches,
yeah,
then I would do it from there. If that was too low, I would put blankets in the chair to boost it up. So it would be like a 20-inch step, and then work on that until she can do 15, 20 repetitions, and then give her some weight. And then once she can do like 10, 15 pounds at that height, then I would start to drop it down, getting it lower and lower to a full squat eventually. So
all right,
would be an example of something I'd do.
Well, thank you, Kim, for writing in. Matthew Goodemote is our guest, and back to the phones we go at 800-348-2551. Stephen in Northampton. Stephen, you're up.
Hi, guys. I have a question. I've been, I'm just over 70, and I've been running probably for 60 years now, and I'm always looking for some ways to get a little edge. And I've heard that the use of knee-high compression socks might help with performance and recovery. Do you have any information on that?
Yeah, so there's some mild improvements that will come with compression. Certainly for recovery, there's improvements to come. As far as performance, it wouldn't be substantial that I've seen. In fact, I think that was disproven, but I would have to go back to some research to make sure I said that right. Recovery-wise, I'm certain that it's helpful.
Why does it
work? The thing that helps performance, blood flow.
Yeah.
So you're minimizing swelling, you're increasing the blood flow to the area. Mm. So there are some study points that would show that compression can help performance. But I think, like, as far as the data went, when you look at statistic of significance, it wasn't high enough to warrant to use it. What has been shown, however, to help runners and increase performance is strength training, and specifically with runners, heavy strength training. So this is one that I'm part of a running cohort that talks about research and runners and runners related injuries. And one of the big themes in the group is the importance of strength training and doing heavy lifts like squats and deadlifts and things like that, but also specifically one-legged strength training. So running is basically hopping from one foot to the other. So you want to make sure that you keep the legs really strong. And for an older runner, the most common area of weakness is the calf muscle, and that will slow down the speed and your performance. And so definitely having a program that includes calf strengthening specifically, and then lifting with heavier and heavier weights. And if you haven't been lifting with heavy weights, you always start safe and smart, work on technique and form, but don't be afraid of weight. It's continue to increase yourself. So we call it progressive resistive exercise. You want to continue to progress. And you can progress by increasing the weight. You can progress by increasing the repetitions or the sets. And you can even change things by changing the speed, by going slower or slightly faster, always maintaining control and good technique. So those are but there's no doubt about it from the most current research that heavy strength training is the most effective way to improve performance for runners.
Stephen, thank you very much for the call. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. While we're on the topic of compression socks, I might as well just ask you this. Maybe you don't know, but what is the deal with the socks that have the windings of copper in them? They've always intrigued me. I almost bought them, but I was truthfully afraid I would pick up the radio station on my ankles, so I didn't do it. But I mean, what is the deal?
Yes. So the idea with copper is that it has some kind of a positive effect on our body's natural healing type of things. And Ray, to be honest with you, I haven't read anything that suggests this is actually true.
Okay.
Anecdotally, I have lots of people who tell me that it's true. One example of a study you could perform is just wrap those same pieces of copper around your calf without the compression and see how you do. Usually these type of things are, you know, they show positive effects in conjunction with something else.
Ah.
And that something else is in of itself effective. So
interesting.
I don't think there's any validity to it. It's not harmful on the other end of it. So
okay.
There's no danger in doing it. And I don't have any issue when people do it, but it's not something I would recommend. I would recommend somebody sleep more to get better.
All right,
injury reduction and then strength training.
But I mean, on the flip side, the copper socks would match my tinfoil hat. So it would work out pretty well in that regard. Jay in Huntington. Jay, you're on.
Yes. As you get older, I'm 71, and about 15 years ago, every time I would sit down for any length of time, over a half an hour, whether it be in the car or on the couch, when I first get up, I cannot stand up straight. I'm looking like an old man. I still ski very actively downhill, but I'm wondering if there's anything that can be done to alleviate that problem.
Mm. Absolutely. So as we get older, degeneration is a normal part of getting older. And with that, after prolonged positions, there'll be a period of time of stiffness. And so one of the areas is the spine, the feet, the knees, the hips, the fingers, the hands, those kind of things. Those are all common areas. That type of stiffness, though, is very short-lived, like seconds to a couple minutes type of thing. So that's like a common thing for people when they get up first thing in the morning. What's not normal is that stiffness to last for several minutes or certainly half hour or longer. But the one of getting straightening out the back, that is very common for the disc in our back. So in between each vertebrae, there's a thing we call a disc, and it's kind of like the consistency of toothpaste. So while you're sitting, the front part of your vertebrae are coming together, and the toothpaste is starting to squirt towards the back of the spine. And then when you get out, you're going from that bent position to a straight position, and there's a whole bunch of fluid collected in the back that makes it difficult to get yourself straight. So one difference between a degenerative condition is it feels stiff, but you can do the movement, whereas a disc, it is very difficult to actually do the movement. So there's a slight difference there. And the solution is bending backwards. And it's the kind of thing that I'm a big advocate of frequency. I say frequency is your friend. So the more frequent you bend backwards, the less likely that problem will linger.
Mm.
And the way you can do that is literally every time you go to the restroom, wash your hands. When you're done washing your hands, bend backwards. Every time you go to the car, before you get in the car, bend backwards a couple times. When you get out of the car, bend backwards a couple times. It doesn't have to be 100 repetitions. It's doing a couple here and there, but frequently throughout the day, like every half hour, every hour, it
okay.
will make a remarkable difference in that condition.
Now, that's a McKenzie thing, right?
It is indeed. Yes.
See, we're learning.
McKenzie was 10 repetitions, 10 times a day. So you do it that often, that frequently, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. And, of course, you know, you get to be 71, and if you're still active, you're doing pretty well. So that's a good thing. Jan
Absolutely.
In Reedsboro, Vermont.
Yeah.
Jan, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So my problem is a few weeks ago I had a cramp in my leg from just stretching in bed, a real bad cramp, and I'm a runner. So I go out to run the next day, and I felt a little stiff, and the next day still felt stiff. Then the next day, it really felt stiff, and I actually tweaked it when I was running. It felt a lot worse. Cut my run in half, and I noticed I have some blood pooling back of the leg. Yeah, it's in back. It's kind of above the knee in the back, bruising, and I can walk fine, but I can't run now, and it's been 10 days, so I'm just wondering. Is that pooling of the blood significant?
Yes. Yes, definitely. So you mean it's bruise, like a black and blue type of thing?
Yes.
Or do you actually
bruise,
see swelling where there's... Okay. Okay, so right at the back of the knee, the hamstring muscle comes down and attaches from the butt, comes down behind the knee. And then from the other end, from your heel, is your Achilles. And then the top of the muscle is a muscle called your gastrocnemius. And right behind the knee, there's also a couple other muscles, popliteus plantaris. Those muscles, all of which could have had a strain sprained to them, not likely from the sleeping part, but definitely from the running part. So the sleeping part could have just been a coincidental symptom to alert you that there was something going on with the calf. And the for runners, I'm a like any runner that comes through my doors, I say you need to get in the habit of foam rolling before you run, period. Because it has a huge benefit for your performance, but also for injury prevention. And so that would be like moving forward, something you want to do. And also strength training. Runners need to strength train to prevent these type of injuries. But when there is a black and blue black and blue behind the knee, there was something that got injured. That's why there's a bruise there. The severity of it is impossible for me to tell over the phone, but the fact that it's impeding your running would suggest it should get looked at. It doesn't mean like, oh, crap, this I'm not going to be able to run again. It just means you don't want to keep injuring it and then just impair your ability to run. So we work with a lot of people who have sprained strains and have had tears and things. And there are very important exercises to do to ensure that you don't have a reoccurrence or make something that right now is a small injury into a very big injury that would require, you know, immobilization or surgery or something like that. So I would advocate for you to get it looked at.
All right, Jan, hey, thanks for the call. This email from Kim. Kim says, I've been a professional dressmaker for 35 years. I've recently been experiencing deep pain in the base of my thumbs, especially my left hand, which does all of the gripping and manipulating as I am right-handed. I recently purchased a high-end infrared mitt. I've been using it for about 5 days now, and it does help. Is there anything I should be worried about? Should I be seeing a doctor in case it gets worse down the road? The pain is at its worst. It shoots up to my elbow. I'm hoping I can work for another 15 years, and that's from Kim.
Yeah, so there are some things right at the base of the thumb tendon and also the joint itself. And this is something that would warrant getting investigated to find out which one it is. If it's a joint, it could just be the beginnings of degeneration, which would require the infrared mitt is fine. It's basically bringing blood flow to the area. And then some basic range of motion exercises to maintain the mobility of the joint. You won't need any real strengthening exercises because gripping all day long doing your job is usually adequate strengthening. If it's a tendon, however, that's a bit different because the tendon can get extremely worse quickly and then impair your ability to do the work and become a chronic problem. And there are strategies to resolve that. And the strategies range from taking medicine to having injections, but definitely doing exercise therapy and having some manual therapy done as well on a fairly regular basis to maintain the tissue mobility and to prevent it from getting substantially worse. Mm. So this would be a case where, yeah, it's a good idea to get it looked at and x-ray to see is it the joint or is it something else like a tendon? And then from there, the course will be set as to what the next step would be.
Was ist das, this infrared mitt? What is that?
So infrared is just a form of heat.
No,
it's kind of like
is.
A heating pad.
Ah.
Okay, yeah. So the infrared, the idea is that it penetrates a little bit deeper than a superficial heating pad. We're
so
talking
you wear the
millimeters.
Thing. Really?
And yeah, it's a yeah, like a
battery
yeah,
operated?
Have little lights inside the mitt. Either battery or sometimes they plug right into the wall, depending on what you got. But
that
yeah.
is so cool. Do they have it like all different items? Can you get infrared pants, for instance?
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
For sure. Pants, not so much, but for joints. Yeah, so ankle, knees, shoulders, yep,
all right.
Hands.
Dear Santa, yep. Let's go to Jacob in Wallkill. Jacob, you're on.
Yes, I was wondering if someone had bad metatarsal pain that was perhaps connected to that foot being on the end of a short leg, would you ever prescribe walking or hiking on really rough terrain to alleviate the pain?
So as a starting point, no. As a starting point, it would be to check the metatarsal is the foot. So it's the foot itself going into where the toes are. So the metatarsal joint is where the foot joins to the toes, just so people know what we're talking about. So what I would first do is make sure you have full range of motion in the joint. And then, like, the call that had, there's a patient or a person that called earlier or emailed earlier that had strained on the top of the foot, I would go into the individual muscles of the foot itself to make sure there wasn't irritation in those joints. And then I would give specific exercises for the foot muscles themselves. As far as longer term, if somebody was coming in the clinic with a presentation of metatarsal pain, I would try to teach to get rid of that pain and then gradually progress them. And certainly hiking on uneven surfaces eventually would be definitely okay with me. It's more as a starting point. No, I would go through the things I said first, because oftentimes there's things you can do when you're not walking to help alleviate discomfort and set you up for a better walk so you don't have the metatarsal pain while you're walking. But overall, I'm not opposed to hiking per se, and I love unevenness because it's good for a lot of other reasons besides the metatarsals.
Jacob, thanks a lot. Very quickly now, let's go to Linda in Altamont. Linda, you have a little less than a minute and a half here.
Well, thank you. Hi.
Hi.
I have extreme excruciating pain that began at the end of November. I'm active. I'm 65. I weigh 112. But it starts like at the bone, at the base of my neck, and it extends to shoulders, right down both arms. And if I try to extend to, like, open a car door, the pain is excruciating, like someone's in there pulling my muscles and tendons apart.
Ouch.
And I can't get one arm all the way up in the air.
Help. Yeah. There's some exercises. One that I start with is what's called a retraction. In the clinic, we call it the don't kiss me exercise. So the way you would do it is you sit in a chair and you make sure that you can have your shoulders above the chair back. So if you have a high back chair, you'd have to put blankets or something down to boost you up. And then you would simply just lean the head and shoulders behind the chair as if someone's coming to try to kiss you that you don't want to kiss. So you're backing your head away from them. And that simple movement right there can help to move the thoracic spine and your neck, which are the source most likely of that severe pain you're having. Because to move and to stretch the arms, if you're having pain in the neck itself, I start at the neck. If we've cleared the neck and there's nothing to find there and you move fine, then we would want to look into the shoulders themselves. And there's several different things, but it'd be too complicated to try to describe it over the phone. So the first part would be to start with the cervical spine. And this is something that physical therapy is really, we treat this all the time. So it would be something, if it doesn't resolve by trying what I said, then it would be a good idea to get somebody to take a look at it and teach you some other things, because you don't need to have that kind of severe pain. There's definitely things you can do.
Well, Linda, thanks a lot. We will leave it right there. Matthew Goodemote, a beautiful job. Thank you for being here, sir. We'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, Ray. Thank you very much.
Support comes from Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design with cabinets from Wellborn, that is. Amerilot, quartz countertops from Cambria, American-made products sold locally, curtislumber.com. And Elot Recycling Incorporated, Glenmont, a full-service recycling company focusing on computer, electronics, battery, lamp, and bulb recycling and office equipment removal, servicing municipalities, hospitals, schools, businesses throughout New York, ELOTRecycling.com. Once again, thanks to Matthew Goodemote for being on the line with us today. Thank you for calling. Apologies if we did not get to your call today. Matthew will be back soon. Thanks to, well, he's worked here for 37 years, Zach Malloy, our engineer. Oh, I'm slipping. Oh, this is not good. Dina Salzman, I remember her. She answered the calls today. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, time for happy nappy now. Tomorrow on the program, it's Irish foods, beer, and history. A German-American will discuss these things with Elizabeth Stack. It's good radio. Stand by now for the Capital Connection.